podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. India have confirmed they will finish top of the World Cup group standings, and they have done so in authoritative fashion, demolishing South Africa, second in the table, by 243 runs. Virat Kohli, on his 35th birthday, made his 49th ODI century to equal Sachin Tendulkar's record tally. Ravindra Jadeja was the bowler's cash-in today, taking his first ODI 5-4 in over a decade. I'm joined by Wisden India editor Adya Sharma. Adya, in a sea of dominant Indian World Cup performances, this actually stands out as one of the most complete, doesn't it?
It does, because I think the general perception was that this is going to be India's toughest competition going into the game. It's something that Virat Kohli also said after the match, that this was the toughest opposition. A team that has been overall so good. I think India just... I'm really surprised by the manner of this victory.
Yeah, it was ridiculous how not that it was easy. I think that's the thing, is that you could see in little bits of some of the bowling how South Africa were good, and it's not as if this means that we need to forget everything we knew about South Africa, but just that India's game plan almost seems so airtight now. It's nice Kohli saying this was our toughest opposition when he's made 100, and in a way, him making 100 is sort of one of the less interesting things from a cricket point of view about this game, just because of how regularly he does it. But it is astonishing, right? I mean, so it's what, it's 49 hundreds and 277 innings. So that's one every 5.5 games or so. And I think it's actually flown under the radar a little bit, just how good a World Cup he's actually having. I guess because when he made that first 100, people weren't talking about the 100 so much as, you know, should he have got the 100 in the way he did? And then after that, there's been this focus on number 49. So it's been when he's got those good half centuries, big half centuries, that people haven't been focused on those innings. They've just been missed centuries. And now he gets number 49 and still, you know, Rohit plays a brilliant innings. Jadeja takes 5 for, I mean, he is obviously the main man, but it's not like we're looking at this World Cup campaign and being like, oh, this is one of the great World Cup campaigns. But he's averaging over 100. He's 7 runs off Quinton de Kock at the top of that table. I mean, Adya, I don't know if you can find anything new to say about him, but maybe try for a couple of minutes.
I'll try all I can. What I really liked was, I mean, to start with, this pitch was difficult to bat on in terms of, even if you see, I think there was a cricket stat where I think the run rate for Eden Gardens is the lowest among all the venues. It is sort of a tricky pitch. And Virat Kohli himself said that how the outside world perceives the approach is very different from how it actually happens. So he was saying that it seems to be different when the openers are batting against the new ball, but the pitch considerably slows down. You know, you need to sort of switch your approach, think of it differently. And that's what Kohli has become an expert in. For him to just assess and understand how an innings needs to be paced. He used the word grind, I think, in the middle, just saying that it required him to anchor one end and let the other side probably score quicker. And that's even when there is so much criticism, say, about, I won't say criticism, but so much debate generally over, you know, his scoring rate. But Virat Kohli himself is so, he just knows, I think ODI cricket just runs inside him. He just knows the DNA so well that, you know, it just comes out to be a cracking performance at the end. And this was it. This was how it was to deal with a difficult pitch against a bowling attack. Again, Keshav Maharaj bowled really well to not give South Africa a breakthrough at that point. And then to sort of, you know, ensure that you are going above par. I think all these things, it's incredible how one man has done it again and again and keeps doing it.
Yeah, it's a good point about Maharaj and that period, I guess, between, I don't know, I mean, after the power play, I suppose, because there's a temptation when you get that good a start to go, right, we're going to try and go for 400 here, when actually that probably wasn't possible and wasn't what was needed. And we actually had, we had one question in asking us to dispel the myth that this was a selfish innings. And I don't think it was at all. I think he played the situation really well. And I think the only thing that made it look as if Cody could have scored quicker was actually just how well Rohit played in the power play. I mean, again, it's not new. He's done this before, but this was, it felt, in a way, India had won the game after 10 overs because they were 9-1 for one and they bowled South Africa out for 83. But it also, it felt like that as well. It really felt like South Africa were going to have to work really, really hard to pull it back. And although they had some good spells with the ball, it never really felt like India were going to get anything except more than a par total from that point onwards, I guess.
Yeah, and generally, obviously, we look at Kohli from a prism of perfection. We, you know, and the team is doing so well that Kohli is outscoring oppositions. So there is just really nothing much to sort of talk about. That's why I feel these things about Kohli's knock, if he could have scored quicker, stuff like this is probably spoken about more than it should be.
Mm. I guess from a batting point of view, maybe actually the most encouraging thing was the knock was from Shreyas Iyer. I mean, obviously he played well against Sri Lanka as well. But we talked about this game after that Sri Lanka game as this being potentially quite a big challenge for him because of those South Africa fast bowlers. And you'd sat in a press conference where he was on quite punchy form when asked about the short ball challenge. But he played, I mean, he played the short ball well and he just played generally well today, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I think actually in the start, I was a bit surprised initially by how, you know, sluggish it looked. But then you could understand how the pitch was. And again, with Kohli, he was ensuring that they're able to just get through that Maharat spell. Shamsi's wavered line and length didn't help, actually, South Africa. But I think because Iyer is known to be such a demolisher of spin, it seemed a bit off when he was not connecting as well. But I think he just took his time. And then what has been probably the biggest, the best point so far in the last two games for Iyer has been that he has accelerated really well, even if it seems like he's starting off steadily. Even in this knock, you could see how he was just able to. And you mentioned the short ball, I think a couple of great hits. What I felt was, I mean, we can discuss this, but potentially should Africa have broken Maharaj's spell down and probably introduced Engidi just to test him out, because Iyer got the chance to settle in, understand the surface, and then once he was in his zone, not much troubled him.
Yeah, it's interesting actually that thing on Maharaj. I can see why they just wanted to put a complete lid on the scoring rate, but I also, maybe hold him back for a couple more, but that also would just be the preordained plan, wouldn't it? Is that your finger spinner comes on and bowls in that spell where you think you might be able to get through the cheap overs. But I guess actually, as we saw later on, spin was actually, that was the main weapon on this surface, and Shamsi just had an off day. And maybe, I guess, unless they come up with a surface that, I mean, this was a surface that should have been pretty helpful and he didn't do his job. You wonder if he's going to play again in the tournament, perhaps. And I guess we saw as well, from the fact that India kept Maharaj to 1 for 30, that looks like a good day for Maharaj. And then you look at how India spinners do, and it's, you know, 5 for 33 for Jadeja, altogether combined with Yadav, it's what, 7 for 40 in 14.1 overs. I mean, Dan, who's our who edits these videos, was saying to us on messages that they were going to make hay later on, and they absolutely did. And I guess that shows, actually, I don't know if it's how South Africa could have used Maharaj better or just how well India played him, but I mean, this pitch was tailor-made for Jadeja and he was absolutely exceptional, wasn't he?
Yeah. Also, I think Rohit for introducing him early, just to ensure, because obviously I think Babuma and Markram both have sort of struggled against spin in that sense. So I feel that introducing him early, when you knew that the ball is turning a bit and you understand how Jadeja is such a good bowler in these situations, so to bring him on early and hold Shami back, I think that was a pretty interesting, it was a good move. But yeah, I mean, what I think I was discussing this with you earlier. What really surprises me is how all these key elements of India's campaign so far, all of them have not played a lot of ODIs leading up to this tournament. Like someone like a Jadeja also, there were question marks over how good he, like where exactly he is in the ODI format, just because he hadn't played any ODIs. 2021, he played just a few in 22. His batting also had sort of been a question mark because he had slowed down a lot. He wasn't the sparkling kind who usually is. I think overall it's really impressive to see how Jadeja and Shami, without playing a lot of ODIs in the lead up, have just come in a World Cup year and done so well. Yeah, that's Jadeja obviously is really good in all formats, but it's been really pleasing to see how he's just come back to ODIs and done so well.
Yeah, I'd forgotten actually. There was a debate, wasn't there, about Akshar versus Jadeja in the build up to the World Cup, with the thinking that Jadeja was the better bowler and Akshar was the better batter.
Yeah.
And that 39 he got to play against New Zealand, that feels really crucial now. I mean, that was the perfect situation for him, in that he is in a way more of a proper batter than a finisher, and he was able to come in and build a partnership. And he has been an actual finisher since then. I mean, 35 of 24 against Sri Lanka. I mean, that was a weird sort of finishing innings, and in that he ran so hard in it, like he only scored two boundaries in that. And then today was another really good finishing innings. It's just like another box ticked. I guess from the as a bowling attack, we're just trying to discuss this with Abhishek as well. Like, has there been a better like five-man bowling attack than this in a World Cup since Shami came into it? I mean, so they've now taken 40 wickets in four games, and in the last three games, they've bowled England, Sri Lanka, and Stafford out for 129, 55, and 83. So if you combine all of those, that's still less, like loads less than they scored today. I don't know. There's just no gaps in it at all. Like, the only thing is if one of them gets injured mid-game, because they obviously no longer have that bowling option at number six. But like, that feels like the only way that you can like get anywhere close to on top of them. Like, it's just a ridiculously complete attack, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, everything seems to be going right for them. And it's sort of difficult to figure out if there has been a better attack. Also, because Bumrah was absent for a while, Shami was, in and out of the ODI, he was rested and all. So they have this group hasn't played a lot together in ODIs. And to see all of them just click together makes for such a pleasant viewing. And they've all come into form at the same time. You're right. There doesn't seem to be any chink in their bowling attack. You've got someone like a Kuldeep Yadav who a couple of years ago wasn't doing really good in ODIs, and now he just looks so good. Same with Jadeja. I think it's the complete attack is it's just there's nothing to complain really, just nothing to complain,
Yeah, I
and
mean,
it's surprising though, if you think about it, you don't have, you have obviously Hardik Pandya not there, and there was so much discussion about how his absence could mean a big, it could be a big loss for India, but it just doesn't seem to be any problem so far.
because we were talking as well that like they brought in Prasidd Krishna, didn't they, into the squad for Pandya, which feels like, I mean, they could have brought in a proper all-rounder, and they didn't do that. I mean, do you think that's the right call? And I guess that seems to suggest that they're just going to keep on with this balance, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think Rahul Dravid explained it a day ago. I think, yeah, a couple of days ago or something. So he basically said that they have backups for everyone. I think it's a clear indication that they're going to play the same team. They don't need someone to fit right into the team right now. First of all, it's very difficult to find a replacement for Hardik Pandya. Who do you pick for that? I think what they've done is just they have a backup spinner, they have a backup batter. They've ensured that if one pace bowler goes down, they have Prasidd Krishna for backup. So they're going to play the same team. They're going to stick to this equation. And they just have a backup bowler now.
Fair enough. I mean, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll touch on South Africa and look ahead to tomorrow's potentially smog-affected Sri Lanka-Bangladesh game. on to South Africa, how worried will they be about this defeat? I mean, 243 runs is a lot to lose by. And in one sense, it maybe feels as if they maybe had this coming. I mean, that bowling attack is not quite elite all the way through, and they don't have the options in the team to cover it if someone has a really bad day, which is what Marco Jansen and also, I guess, Tibray Shamsi had. So I don't know, are they worried about this? I mean, there's not much they can do to change it, or do they just think, you know, we came up against a really good side and they had a really good day and there's not much you can do when that happens?
They've lost two, right? In the two yeah. games, they've been chasing. And even against the Netherlands, you could see that they started off slow and their approach was a bit muddled up. But yeah, I think bowling-wise, you are right. There doesn't seem to be an obvious answer to it, because Jansen just had an off day. I mean, he was completely off it. He was spraying the ball around. He just couldn't find his lengths. You thought someone like a Tabrez Shamsi could do well in these conditions, especially stifle the flow in the middle alongside Maharaj, which on paper seemed to be a good move, but again, it just did not turn out to be nice. I don't think there's anything they specifically have to change. I think it was just off day for a couple of bowlers.
Yeah, we did have one question asking if South Africa had batted first, would it have been a different result? It is weird just how much of a difference that seems to have on their batter, because as well as those two defeats, they also almost lost to Pakistan, didn't they? Chasing not a huge total, but you know, a decent sized total. And then in between that and this game, they go and smash 350 against New Zealand again. It's just such a weird psychological thing that that can happen to a team. I felt really bad for Jansen when he thought his day was done, because Markram bowled two overs, so him and Shamsi only bowled nine each. And then Ngidi limps off with four balls left in the final over, and he has to come back on to bowl them and gets hit for two boundaries straight away. That did not look much fun for him. We were discussing this as well. Is how good India are an issue? Like, there hasn't been a huge amount of jeopardy for them in the tournament. And then I guess it's not just an issue. It's like, why are they this good? Like, I don't think England decide that this is a low quality World Cup. I mean, you've got a few aging greats, I guess. So some teams might have not quite as good as they look on paper because their players are just past their peaks and that sort of thing. But in general, I think that, like, you look at the standard of a lot of like individual play and think that's really good, and yet India are just steamrolling everyone. Like, how are they that good?
I wish I knew the answer for that, but it just seems to be everything is clicking in place for them. They've got a bit of luck also going for them. Players who did not play a lot of ODIs in the lead up have just come in and really done well in the format. Rohit Sharma's approach, even though it's not a new approach for him, it's the results that he's gotten have been exceptional. I don't think anyone would have expected this level of high scoring from Rohit at the start. To have Bumrah, Shami, Siraj together, it can't be easy to have all three in the same attack and sort of, you know, have all of them do so well together. It's just happening magically for them so far. I think everyone from Rahul Dravid to Rohit Sharma to the bowling coach have been asked about if it's a concern that they are, they probably go into the knockouts undefeated. But this team doesn't seem to worry too much about that. They have categorically said that they want to win as much as they can. They don't worry too much about breaking that flow. For them, it's about that vague word that's called momentum, to carry it to carry it forward and just, you know, keep going. Yeah, I mean, it's really surprising to think of it, you know. We used to talk about the great Australian team and how they were so difficult to beat. With India, they have been challenged at different points, but they've still prevailed. It just seems that they have a plan B for everything.
Yeah, and that Australia team did get challenged at times as well. I mean, they had that game against England in 2003 where Andy Bickle had the game of his life. But it's not as if they absolutely breeze through every single game. But yeah, this does feel like that. Like, I know that people are saying, oh, isn't it all set up for India to lose in the semi-final in the final? Obviously, that might happen. But equally, to me, it feels more like a team who are a distance a bit better than the rest.
I mean, beyond all the analysis and numbers, what's been there to see is that this team is really enjoying themselves. Obviously, that comes with victories and everything. But this team hasn't come to this tournament with the pressure of playing against, playing in front of a home crowd. That was something that was discussed a lot. Would that turn against them? Would that pressure of expectations burden them? It's just been, I mean, the support has been so overwhelming. All India matches have been nearly packed. And they've just stood behind the players. And the players also seem to be like laughing, dancing around without any trouble, without any sort of pressure as such on them. It just seems to be a team that knows that they will win. They are very confident about their abilities and they're not carrying any extra burden. Yeah, I think that's one thing that's been there to see definitely across all India games. There's this ease that the team is going with. There are no jitters or pressure or anything. Even when at this point you could feel that, you know, okay, we're approaching a knockout stage where, you know, it could all come back to how it has been so many times.
There's been a few suggestions that the World Cup format should be changed, basically actually because of how good India are. So I think Tom Moody's the latest to say that the teams who top the group should get a second chance in the knockouts. I mean, apart from the suggestion, basically assuming that India will screw it up somehow, what do you think of it?
I don't think teams should be given a life as such. Knockout games have context. A good team is good because they're able to win a must-win game and go forward. And this format has been there. I don't think there needs to be a specific reason to bring it. I know, obviously, Indian fans would love it now. But, you know, I think for a team to completely and convincingly and not have any, you know, asterisk at the end of it, they have to win a must-win game and go through. And that's what makes a great team great.
Yeah, yeah. And I think some of the motivation for it is actually it's because of the format of the World Cup otherwise. Yeah. So I think when you have a team playing 9 games and being so good, the idea that all that could come undone on one game, I can see why people have a reaction to that. I do think the reason for that is because the overall format is not great, the 10-team thing. And I mean, this is also a bit moot because it seems like, it's already confirmed. I mean, obviously these things can change, but that the next World Cup will be 14 teams, 2 groups of 7 heading into a Super Sixes, which I think is a decent format. So yeah, I think it's a bit moot. I do sort of get the motivation for wanting a change, but I think it's actually more about that highlights other issues with the format than it being something to change in and of itself. So on to tomorrow's game, that's between Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. It's a big one in terms of Champions Trophy qualification, and Sri Lanka need to win to keep their faint semi-final hopes alive. That's another little quirk of this World Cup format, that Sri Lanka are still just about in contention. But there's a potential issue with smog in Delhi. Can you sum up what's going on there? And is there a chance the game gets abandoned or moved? What do we think is going to happen?
So this is something that has, it's a seasonal thing. It happens in Delhi every November, and it sort of intensifies closer to the festival of Diwali when there are a lot of crackers burst. Ideally, there shouldn't have been a game in Delhi in November because the smog that is a combination of stubble burning from neighboring states along with just cold winds, suspended cold winds, and just a bit of pollution and everything combined.
Just explain quickly what stubble burning is.
So basically crop burning from in the neighboring states. So basically the smoke from all of that floats into Delhi. But yeah, basically the AQI, the air quality index, has been pretty high. It's been pretty bad in Delhi. It's been in hazardous category, and the government has been taking a lot of steps to sort of curb that. Obviously, the players themselves are concerned. Bangladesh and Sri Lanka cancelled their practice sessions, and so ideally, this shouldn't have had a game in November. it's good in them that they did not have any games after Diwali. That would have been disastrous. But I would say even November 6th is too dangerous for a game to be held. You've seen what happened in the 2017 test at the same venue, India-Sri Lanka, where the players had to wear masks. You know, few players were vomiting. So in terms of what would happen with the game, it's difficult because I think air quality is assessed the same way as other weather conditions on the match day itself. So they will have to analyze on the day and see if it's fit to play. Logistically, obviously, now it's too close. But earlier there were discussions about whether it can be shifted to another venue. But it's too much of a hassle. I don't think logistically that could have happened. But yeah, it's really concerning. I don't think players should be playing in these conditions at all. I think it was a bad choice to have Delhi, a game in Delhi in November.
Worrying stuff. Well, please do join us tomorrow when we'll hopefully have had a game to look back on. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.